Hi, folks. You're listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig Hartman, the podcast where we cut through the fat of the mentality of a chef, and we get down deep and dirty into their psyche and learn what makes them tick. It's the place where you can listen to your favorite chefs and hopefully be inspired and maybe appalled, too, sometimes. So you can listen to this at chewfat.net. If you're listening, you can go and ask any questions that you'd like to ask of chefs, upcoming chefs, and whatnot. Tonight we have Chef Dean Maupin from Keswick Hall and Fawcett's Restaurant. Dean has received many accolades, and he's a fantastic chef. He's been lauded by StarChefs.com as one of the best new chefs. He's been lauded by my favorite, John Mariani, when he was the chef de cuisine for Fawcett's before, as one of the America's best new restaurants. He's been talked about in Food & Wine magazine, the New York Post, and now Chew the Fat.
Chew the Fat.
Chew the Fat. So, Dean, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. Thanks.
Hey, you have fun tonight? Was it a good night at the restaurant?
It was a restaurant night. It was entirely eventful and dramatic. So
that's awesome. So you're kind of wound up and...
Completely wound up. Wound up and getting ready to get a lot of things organized and ordered for tomorrow.
You have a big day tomorrow?
We have a pretty steady day tomorrow. Yeah, pretty big weekend ahead of us.
Nice. Nice. Well, tell us, you're a family man too, right?
I am. I have two young children.
Cool. Tell us a little bit about your family.
My wife, we've been married for 3 years, Erin, about 3.5 years.
Sure.
We have a daughter who is almost three. She'll be three in April, and a son who'll be one next month, late March.
Nice.
And they are entirely what keeps me together and focused and driven.
Awesome.
In what I do, no doubt about that.
So when you go home, are you the big-time chef at home?
I'm not. I'm actually a terrible home cook.
Really?
And I'm not shy to say that. It just I can cook out. I can grill.
Yeah.
I can hook up some steaks. I can do all that. Behind the electric range, things just don't jive. My wife will be the first to attest to that. So she does. She's a great cook. She's a phenomenal cook, actually.
Yeah.
I should say. She does most of the cooking there, which is great because, you know, like I said, she's so good at it. And if you look at my my waistline, there's no denying the fact that I like to eat, and she facilitates that. So,
well, you know what? I'm glad you said that because I struggled at home too, cooking. You know, I'd end up making the biggest mess and taking so long to get things done, and my wife would be, you know, what is wrong with you, big time chef? Can't you get this done? So, you know, you've made me feel a little bit better about that.
Yeah, no, it's just, things turn out, but I don't know. I just don't have the attention span for it, really. I think that it's so mechanical in the kitchen. Not to take away from the process and the sort of glory of it, but, you know, being a chef for as long as I've been working in a professional kitchen, and just learn to think that way, that you know just the way things are set up, you know, in your professional kitchen, it's just a different world being at home.
Yeah.
And so, you know, translating the two into one is just difficult. So
yeah, my wife is like an executive chef. I mean, she's like a food and beverage director. When we're at home and we have dinner, She like follows time schedules and everything, and
it puts
a lot of pressure on me. She's like, you know, we're eating at 7, there's children, and I'm trying to get this stuff done, and then she'll be like, she'll throw something in, well, look, make up donuts, you know, right?
Right.
And I just like, okay, and I have stuff everywhere, so it's kind of fun. Well, look, you know, we read a little bit about your accomplishments, and let me ask you a question. Do you feel successful?
I do. It depends what day you ask that question.
Sure.
To be honest with you, I do to an extent, not to the extent of, you know, having sort of a big head and thinking that I'm on top of everything. Because I think I stay grounded, but I do feel like I've made it. And I'm a local boy, so you know, here to Albemarle County and Charlottesville and the surrounding area. I think I've made it to the top of my game professionally at this point by taking on this challenge of being a chef of Keswick Hall, filling your shoes, which is huge.
Yeah, they're big.
So in,
size 20. No, I'm just kidding. They're actually, they're wide. They're actually wider than they are big.
In the sense of that, okay, I've been sort of, you know, brought on to do this. I must have done something right. As many times as I could have second guessed, you know, a dish or my style or whatever, I must have done something right to have landed here, had to end up here. It's destiny, if you will. I thought my position at Clifton was sort of like the pinnacle of my success as a chef in this region.
Right.
And to have gone there, and I feel like I was successful there. I feel like I've, and all of that sort of is driven from feedback, you know?
Right.
You know, it's driven from customer feedback where you know that people like your stuff. And there's certainly people out there who don't. But for the most part, it's positive. And then from from the professional administration fiscal side of it, of being successful, getting the numbers right, making a business work, you know, and getting the numbers in line. And I sort of work real hard at that. Well, to an extent, you know, I keep my pulse on it, but not overly successful. I think the real challenge at this point is opening a restaurant, you know?
Right.
And if you can do that and last the test of time, that's sort of like the pinnacle, I think. But to an extent, I do. I do feel successful. I don't know how it all came about, and I don't know exactly what makes me feel that way, but... you know,
do you think you're actually lucky, or do you feel like, you know, part of this, because you say you don't know how it happened, but do you feel lucky, or do you really think that, you know, there's things that you did that might set you apart from other chefs?
Well,
I'm not asking you to say that you're better than everybody. Just is there something inside you think that sets you apart, attribute you have, or?
There's definitely a work ethic and a drive. Not to say that most chefs don't have that. They all have, most have that. I think I've been lucky in the sense that I've landed in the hands of good people along the way. I never ended up working for, like, schmucks. You know what I mean? I've always ended up working for people who really had their stuff together, and companies that had their stuff together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And kitchens that really ran well. So, and I think... the first restaurant that I worked in was a really well-run place. Mm-hmm. That let me into my first hotel experience, which is a really well-run place and run by a chef who was, you know, a mentor and a nurturer. That propelled me into the next kitchen that was a really good fit for me and working for the right person. So it really lies in the quality employer, you know, the quality chef. And I guess you could say that was luck. Yeah, I never ended up working for somebody where I left with a really bad taste in my mouth saying, hey, you know, what the hell was I doing there?
Yeah.
You know?
So in the beginning, did you actually say in your mind, okay, I here are some places I want to work. They got really good chefs. Or
not
did
really.
You land in them and just like, it just happened?
It just happened. I mean, I was cooking in a restaurant in high school. It shut down 2 months after I graduated high school. And I'd been cooking there for like a year and a half.
Right.
And I just got hooked up from that point at the Boar's Head Inn with Ken Harnad, who was the chef there at the time.
Sure.
And, you know, it just happened, you know.
Right.
And then... I don't know if it was really my drive to end up at the Boar's Head, but the chef that I had worked for originally, I guess maybe saw something in me and said, you know, this guy needs direction and this is the right place for him to go.
Right.
And then just from there, it was just sort of a stepping stone onward and upward.
True. Hey, a question. Now, I know that you did the apprenticeship program at the Greenbrier Hotel, which
right.
I've always thought was probably the number one apprentice program, European style, in America.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the chefs, if you go back in the history, like Herman Rusch,
right.
are, you know, some of the probably the top quality people before television, before the star chef.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these guys were for real.
These guys were for real, no doubt.
And they were fantastic. How did you end up there at the Greenbrier?
Completely, I don't even know how you word that. It just happened. I will say that there were, the connection to it was the first restaurant I ever worked in, the guy who owned it had been an apprentice back in the 70s, but he was no influence whatsoever on it. I just uh-huh. knew about the program. So, fast forward like 5 or 6 years, I'm cooking around. I've always had this apprenticeship in the back of my head, so I knew I was either going to go to culinary school
right.
or try to get into this apprenticeship program, but I really didn't know a lot about it. But I applied to it. I sent my resume, didn't hear anything back, and I followed up about a year later or something, and they, I don't think they had lost my resume, but there wasn't obviously probably much interest in me, because you had sure. to have a culinary, you had to graduate from culinary school to even get into the program at that mm-hmm. time. But I guess my, you know, they may have been, you know, looking to go through some old resumes to bring some people on. They found mine. I happened to be home one day. Answered the phone, inviting me down for an interview.
Sure.
And I went down there, and I was cooking at the CNO restaurant downtown at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down and one November night and staged, and it was completely different world. I mean, you walk into a sure. kitchen where they're wearing toques and neckerchiefs, and there's, you know, 60 chefs, and they all look mean. You know? And I went down and kind of did my thing and trailed for a night and talked and whatnot, and ended up hiring me as a cook's helper to start the following April. So I came back to Charlottesville, knew I was going to be going back down there in April. The title cook's helper, which was sort of you know, strange to me, like, wow, I'm actually a cook's helper.
Right.
You know what I mean? What's that position do? But anyhow, got my foot in the door. And went down there and worked, and the cook's helper position actually ended up, it was really a line cook position. And
sure.
I had to work down there a year, and I earned my way into the apprenticeship. So by saying that, they accepted 8 people a year. And throughout that, my first year there, I would go to all the apprenticeship meetings. I would help with the show work. I would help with ice carvings. And prove that I wanted to be an apprentice. And then so that October, they let me in the program for the following year, and it's a three-year program.
Sure.
Undoubtedly the best thing I ever did as a chef.
That's awesome. You know, I always felt like one of the large hotels that are run European style would be a really great way to kickstart someone's career.
Yeah.
But it seems like today, you know, the young guys that are getting, and women that are getting out of chef school are really shooting for small independent restaurants that have a chef that already made it, and as if that's the place to receive a foundation. What do you think of the foundation that you received there at the Greenbrier?
It made me who it molded me to who I am as a culinarian, without a doubt. I remember I had been cooking for 5 or 6 years professionally, at least I thought I was kind of mm-hmm. professional. But I really didn't have a great foundation on, say, for example, stock making.
Right.
You know, I'd eaten at a restaurant or two and had some fantastic, like, you know, veal stock-based sauces,
mm-hmm.
but never knew how to make the stock. I remember once I made, like, a whole batch of veal stock, and I strained it, and I tasted it, and I thought it was terrible, and
right.
I just dumped it, right? I didn't know you had to reduce it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, but anyway, the foundation of you know, it's the fonds de cuisine. It's
right.
the base of all the magic. And they really, that was the core of that apprenticeship program.
Right.
You know, because you as a first-year apprentice, you would spend, you know, 10 weeks just doing stocks. Mm-hmm. It's your job. You're roasting 400 pounds of veal bones every day.
Yeah.
You're putting on stock, you're straining it off, and you're pouring it on a whole new set of veal bones and making fortified. I mean, it was just an incredible hands-on experience in repetition.
Mm-hmm. You know, sure.
Which I've always said is, you know, how you get it, how you end up, you know, really learning the technique, and it's making it every day. It's going through the motions, and as repetitive as it may seem, it's really different every day, and you know, really develops a great ethic within you.
But one question for me is, you know, I was at the Pinehurst Hotel when I first got out of chef school, and you know, it was a European-style place. But one thing that I found that was very interesting was the fact that, you know, all of these companies that would come in would do these, you know, themed resort-style buffets and dinners and really upscale dinners that were different every day. And I felt in my own heart that instead of being in a kitchen where I was maybe doing amuse-bouche for 6 months or, you know, on the salad station, that being able to, you know, one day do like some kind of African, you know,
yeah,
buffet,
diversity.
You know, and then the next day, you know, having something Caribbean,
right,
was really kind of an unbelievable experience for me. And I think I always looked at Greenbrier as the best. And, you know, I'm glad to hear that you had a good experience. And
every day was different there, you know, and they did it right. And they did it on great scale, and they did it with great, such professionalism and grace.
Right.
And there's some great character traits that I took from that place, and a lot of great people that I work with there, and a lot of who are still there.
Yeah.
You know, the tenure of some of the culinarians there. You know, there was an A.M. Saucier, Kenny Boone, he's retired now, but he'd been in that kitchen for like 44 years, you know?
Yeah, he probably taught you some pretty cool things.
Yeah, just unbelievable people.
Hey, I'm going to switch gears now and go kind of in a little bit of a different direction. Do you think that culinary speaking, do you think culinary arts are more technique or more art?
It's a really good question. I think that it's more technique, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it art sort of versus craft, if you will?
Right.
I mean, I think that the process is, I mean, the process of coming in daily and sort of making the place tick and run and the food produced being what you want it to be, the flavors that you want it to be and executed the way you want it to be.
Sure.
There's a real craft to that. There's a real... I don't know how you would sort of describe it. I mean, there's so many things that go into it, but they're really basic, you know, techniques, you know, for a successful recipe, for a successful kitchen.
Sure.
The art of it, I always felt, was driven kind of by the inspiration of how I feel on any given day,
mm-hmm.
right? So I came in today and I wasn't really feeling the oyster chowder that we had been doing for the past couple of weeks.
Right.
And so, doesn't work for me today. What do we got? What can we do to change that? So we made a great lobster bisque.
Mm-hmm.
Got fresh lobsters in, got the heads. What are we going to do? And so I kind of like always thought about the art side of it as that sort of inspirational driven, changing how, you know, the emotional part of
sure,
it, you know?
Yeah.
But a very integral part of it.
Sure. Well, let me ask you then, you know, I guess you believe that the technical side is paramount. I mean, you got to have that if you're going to succeed. And then, so you believe that there's something inside a person now that's maybe that helps take it to the top. Something in their mental capacity.
Absolutely.
Or their heart that takes it. So you have two technicians. So let me ask you, if you had two technicians, two people are technically the same, but one person, for some reason, the food looks better and tastes better. Have you seen that? Do you feel like you've seen that before?
Absolutely.
And what do you think it is? What do you actually think it is that separates those two people?
I think it's an interesting question. I think that what they've seen, what they've experienced, what they've been through, how they've traveled, what they've tasted, mm-hmm. One person can have all the technique in the world and work in the same place forever, but bring the same person who's traveled the world
right.
and eaten in great restaurants and studied the menus of great chefs. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think that's kind of the difference. It's who's kind of doing their homework, who's really been around the block. To me, I never rest with how I'm looking at
right.
what I want to do with food. It's never ending. It's a never ending. It's almost it almost inhibits me in a way where it's consuming.
Right.
And I'm always just trying to figure out how to make something better, how to make more sense of a dish.
Right.
How to get the most out of a product.
So you find you do that all the way down to the minute detail?
Yeah, but we don't take it to... I never found myself taking it to a great extreme.
Right.
There's a part of the process in kind of coming up with a dish or executing a service where at the end of the day, it's just food, and you just want to really get the techniques right,
Sure.
So, there are a lot of chefs out there who have great staffs, lots of people, lots of hands in the kitchen. They're all dedicated. They're all silent. They're all completely focused. That's very far and few between, experience. Generally you've got, three or four or five probably at the most good sets of hands in the kitchen to produce a great service, and you kind of roll with what you got.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to inspire these guys to produce great food. Minute details is kind of something that I never really found myself, relying on so much.
Sure.
Or pushing for so much. You know what I mean? Clean, yeah. Fresh, yeah. On time, hot, technical, of course. But we're not plating food with tweezers.
Right. Right. I have some of those tweezers.
Do you really?
Yeah, I watched Michelle Richard's people using the tweezers one time. I went right out and got some.
Right.
And but I never had a chance really to use them. I happen to know what you go through at Keswick Hall. Speaking of Keswick Hall and Fawcett's Condé Nast Gold List 2011, number one small hotel in North America.
Huge.
And the highest rating for food of all hotels in North America. How do you feel about that?
Well, I wish I could take the credit for it.
You can take it.
To be honest.
No, but
the way I think about that is that it's a completely admirable challenge to keep up with. I want to maintain that status. I inherited that, and I won't deny that for a second. That was you. That was your staff. Like I said, I will do my utmost to maintain that quality and standard and direction. It's a great accolade for the hotel. It says a hell of a lot about the culinarians that have held this kitchen down for the past few years. It's a huge accolade. I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's almost like I don't even think that the word is completely out there yet. There's a lot to come from that, because it's huge.
True enough. Well, let me ask you. A lot of people I hope will be listening to this podcast, and young culinarians, people who think they might want to own restaurants. Mm. What would you tell people in this business that might help them? Is there anything you can just throw out there that you think people need to make it to a high level?
I think a great intestinal fortitude. No, I think that there's a if you just have a great sort of passion for food and product and, you know, putting things together on a plate that just make people genuinely happy. If you have that niche, if you have that craft within you, that ability, and not everybody does. If you have that and you can maintain it, run with it, know sure. that that's the driving force behind it all. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like beyond all the stress of fiscal responsibility mm-hmm. and making people happy and what's going on in the front of the house and, you know, the dish, you know, the stewards, people washing dishes,
right.
Your grill cook, whatever. All the things that you juggle in a day as a chef, it really all comes down to making people happy. If you know that you can do that, it makes all of those things sort of so much easier. In that, at the end of the day, you can maintain a great comfort and a great happiness knowing that you're successful doing that. I think that ultimately, you know, that's sort of the clearest message.
Right.
You know, if you got it and you know it, keep with it. Times are, you know, there will be dark times, no doubt. There will be 80-hour work weeks. There will be time away from the family. You're going to work when everybody else is getting off. You're working harder on the holidays. You know, all of that's just sort of par for the course, you know. So
right.
that sort of goes back to kind of the intestinal fortitude of it, you know. And I'll tell you what else doesn't hurt. Marry somebody in the business.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. My wife was a pastry chef. She knows what I go through. She knows what it's about. I think that, you know, in itself is plays a big role in my overall, you know, happiness and direction.
Cool. Hey, your favorite meal of all time, buddy. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite meal of all time?
Patrick O'Connell in Little Washington. Dinner there, no doubt.
Sure.
I guess it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. It was my wife and I. I'll tell you that no expense was spared, you know, on the food or the wine side.
Sure.
And just the experience, you know, it wasn't even about the expense of the meal. It was just about the entire, the ambience and the quality and the care and comfort that he and his team provided. Beyond that,
that's awesome.
It's a great grilled steak at home, you know.
Yeah, I think I could concur with that. So, what's next for you? You have some personal goals, some things you're hoping to achieve. I mean, you know, you're moving up in kind of the culinary field, and you've had success, but you're still kind of young. You know, you got a few years.
Yeah.
Got a few years left in you.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. I can never see myself doing anything else. It's always going to be, you know, a great drive. You know, the whole time, my ultimate goal is to own my own restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
What that restaurant is changes on any given day.
Right.
You know, what the style of it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that in my heart of hearts that. That's my sort of, you know, utopia. You know, it's owning your
right.
own place. It's being your own boss. It's all of your own style. Every decision, you know, comes from you. But also the success of that rides on you and
right.
supporting a family and mm-hmm. putting kids through college, you know, and here I'm looking at that probably, you know, 16 years from now. And what's the expense going to be then? Wow.
Yeah, true.
But anyway, the ultimate goal is my own place.
Right.
And how that comes about and when that comes about, you know, love to do it by the time I'm 40. That's, you know, 4 years from now. That's sort of always been my goal.
Sure.
But not to sell my tenure here at Keswick.
Yeah, Shore, right.
Any stretch of the imagination. There's a lot to do here. I think there's a lot of great years ahead of me here, and I really look forward to them.
Right.
But, you know, the ultimate goal is my own place, without a doubt.
Well, that's awesome. And, look, I appreciate you you know, talking to us and kind of bearing your heart and soul about how you feel about doing this business. And I know people are going to be interested in hearing what you have to say. You know, your success has, you know, been something that, you know, thousands of chefs around the country, you know, kind of wish they had achieved. And I think that I think somewhere along the line, people will hear and they'll be able to say, well, you know, I think that's helpful. So I sure appreciate it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed talking to me tonight. And folks, again, you're listening to Chew the Fat with Craig Hartman. Don't forget, you can go to chewfat.net, ask questions. Let me know what you want to hear. Tell me what you thought about folks like Dean. And if you have any suggestions, we'd love to hear them. If you have any suggestions for chefs, we'd like to hear that too. And have a great night.
I know I have. 'Cause this song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record. And it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie."